SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Welcome everybody into another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Sun Belt Podcast. My name is Brian Stone. I'm your host as always, joined once again by Texas State writer Vidal Espinoza. Say hello to everybody at home.
Hey everyone.
Perfect. So let's go ahead and jump into this previous weekend's games. I'm just reading them in the order that ESPN.com has them. So starting off from this past Saturday, Coastal Carolina faced off with South Alabama and was able to pretty much just, I guess I would say, impose their will on the Jaguars. You know, it was a 23-6 win. Wasn't quite, the same level of blowout that they had, the Chanticleers had the week before against Georgia State, but still a good win nonetheless, and they stay undefeated.
It wasn't, like you said, it wasn't like the blowout from last week. I thought the game was going to be a little closer when we had our podcast last week. I thought this game would be a lot closer than that previous game, and it was, but Coastal kind of ran it down South Alabama's throat. They had three rushers go over 60 yards, and they just controlled the clock and just like you said, just enforced their will onto them.
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of one of those games, and you know, I guess if you're at this stage and you're Coastal, you don't want to take unnecessary chances when you know you're just flat out better than another team. Especially, you know, Coastal's got two games coming up this coming weekend at Troy, and then the big showdown the week after at home against App State. You know, they did play it a little bit conservative overall. I mean, they ran for 236 yards as a team. But yeah, I mean, basically, you know, they kind of implemented the, you know, when Georgia Southern played South Alabama 2 weeks ago, they kind of just pounded the rock, essentially. And South Alabama just wasn't able to score. So, I mean, you know, wouldn't Vidal, if you, as a Texas State fan, if your team was able to just run the ball and play defense every game and guarantee a win, wouldn't you just do that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, that's the basic strategy of football. You want to control the clock. You want to keep their defense on the field, keep getting 4 or 5 yard, you know, pops on every run. And yeah, I mean, that's the basic formula. I mean, it's not pretty. It's not sexy. It's not high scoring, you know, numbers all over the place, but it gets you the win, and that's all that matters.
For sure. So when I take a look at this game, you know, Desmond Trotter, South Alabama's quarterback, fairly efficient, but wasn't able to throw a touchdown in this game. 23 of 31, 243. South Alabama's Achilles heel the last 2 weeks in the losses to Georgia Southern and Coastal Carolina, they just don't run the ball as efficiently as you would hope to see from a team that you kind of want to see take that next step in the Sun Belt. You know, they had a number of guys run the ball, including Trotter himself. But all in all, you know, 38 carries, 93 yards, 2.4 yards per carry for their entire team. You know, it's a bad night because Coastal, if Coastal's running for 7 yards a pop like they did, you know, you can throw the ball all over the field, and they threw the ball fairly efficiently, but you just cannot not be able to run the ball and hope to win one of these games.
Yeah, they were very inefficient. Coastal had, like I said, they had three rushers go over, you know, the 60-yard rushing mark. So they controlled the clock. And when South Alabama had the ball, they were only efficient on a couple of drives. They had 175 total yards on all their non-scoring drives. And they went for it 7 times on fourth down, which tells you they got to that point of desperation many, many times and just dug themselves into a hole that they just couldn't get out of.
Yeah, that's tough. You know, this is a tough game because it's like one of those where, you know, Vegas predicted it exactly. It was a 17-point spread once the betting lines closed. Coastal covered it. But it wasn't as, like I said, you know, off the top, as explosive as the win over Georgia State was. So, I mean, good win for Coastal. I don't feel like there's a ton to say about it for either team. You know, we kind of expected this outcome. So, I mean, I guess let's just move on. You know, Coastal moves to 7-0 overall for the season, 5-0 in Sunbelt play. South Alabama drops below 500 to 3-4 and 2-2 in conference play. So going further down the slate, UL Monroe's rough year continues. You know, Georgia State is able to pound the Warhawks 52-34. You know, a lot of offense in this game from both sides, but in the end, it just turned out, and we knew this, but it just turned out that UL Monroe, they don't have the weapons on offense to keep up with pretty much anybody in the Sun Belt. I hate to say it, but I hate to beat a dead horse, but that's kind of what it is at this point.
Yeah, they don't have an identity on offense, really. We talked about it last week. You know, they lost their four-year starter at quarterback, and they're just trying to find some sort of, you know, footing in the Sun Belt. And Georgia State just came out, you know, just on fire. I mean, the first play of the game was a bomb to get into Monroe territory, and they just had control the whole game. They didn't look back, and it just wasn't a close game from the beginning. And that's what's plagued Monroe the whole, you know, season, is they just get themselves into a bind, and there's nothing to fall back on. There's no powerful running game. There's no powerful passing game. There's no consistency at all.
Right. I mean, you know, when you look at the box score here, and Georgia State was up, you know, 42-14 at halftime, you know, I get it. UL Monroe's not a good football team, but to allow 42 points in the first half to anyone outside of, you know, like a ranked Power 5 school is tough to stomach. The only real plus that I have, I will give UL Monroe credit here. You know, their quarterback, Jeremy Hunt, stepped in for Colby Suits, who was the starter. Hunt played fairly well. I mean, a lot of it, like, you know, I said at halftime the game was essentially over, but played pretty well in garbage time, you know, threw for 339 yards and 3 scores. Is there any reason that they shouldn't just roll with Hunt from here on out and see what they've got?
They should just go with him. I watched the highlights, and he moved very well in and out of the pocket. He was going through his progressions, going through, you know, going through all of his receivers, making all the throws he needed to make. And I was pretty impressed. I know a lot of the yards and stuff were when they were behind and in garbage time, but I thought he looked very confident, and I'd say go with it. It was a good enough performance. If I was the coach, just to let him, you know, you're winless. Let's see what the young man can do.
I mean, a lot of it's in garbage time, but knowing what we know about Georgia State's defense, they could have been trying their hardest, and UL Monroe might have just been walking the dog on them, you know, offensively. Like, Georgia State does not have a good defense overall. I mean, you know, look at how, you know, we said it a little earlier, look at how South Alabama played Coastal this past weekend, and look what happened the week before when Georgia State played them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, credit to Jeremy Hunt. You know, UL Monroe might have found at least a spark at quarterback, if not kind of their answer for the rest of the year. But, you know, Georgia State's one of those teams in the Sun Belt, and, you know, Arkansas State's kind of the same way. Troy's kind of the same way. It's impossible to kind of get a handle on what kind of team they are from a week-to-week basis, because they're so peaks and valleys every single week.
Yeah, it's true. It's really true that, you know, if Georgia State did have they jumped out pretty early, but what if they didn't jump out early? What if Monroe had kept going the way they were going? It would have been a lot closer of a game. And yeah, you're right. They're one of those teams that they do rely on the performance of their offense 100%, because if they're not firing all cylinders and their defense just gives up, you know, horrible amount of points, the score's the other way around.
Yeah, and it gets them into trouble against teams that can play conservatively and just limit the amount of drives that Georgia State's offense has. I mean, Cornelius Brown the fourth, they call him Quad Brown, you know, played pretty well in this game, 20 of 32, 241, and three scores. Like I said, it's hard to take anything away from this game just because we know how bad UL Monroe's been all year. So, I mean, credit to Georgia State for getting the win. And that, like I said, they had kind of put the game away at halftime. But, I mean, this is what we expected out of UL Monroe, is to kind of put themselves out of the game early. And this is kind of what we've expected from Georgia State. Like I said, it's 1 week they're scoring 50, the next week they lose by 50, and you just can't get a handle on anything that they're doing on a week to week basis. So, I mean, I don't know. Georgia State moves to 3-3 with the win, 2-3 in Sun Belt play. UL Monroe drops to 0-8. Yikes. 0-5 in conference play as well. Keep going down the list of games from this past weekend. A game that was tighter than, honestly, I thought it would be. Louisiana was able to pull out a 27-20 win over Arkansas State. You know, it's tough, too, because it's, when you really look at it, it wasn't tight score-wise until, let's say, what was it? You know, 2:24 left in the game. I mean, outside of the first half, okay, fine. Arkansas State led 6-0 after at halftime, but Louisiana felt like they were kind of coasting there. And then Arkansas State scores two second half touchdowns, including, like I said, the one with 2:24 left to go, and all of a sudden you've got a ball game. So what a weird game overall.
Yeah, you look at the stat sheet, you look at all the, and you know, you watch the game, and you're exactly right. It wasn't like it started off like, oh wow, this is like the game of the week right here. It just kind of came out of nowhere as a really close game. And yeah, I mean, you know, Louisiana pulled it out there, and it was a, you know, exciting last bit of the game. And the thing though I take away from this game, we talked about it also last week on the podcast, is Arkansas State with that two quarterback system. And Logan Bonner, he's been, his average per pass was only 4.5 yards in that game. And he just hasn't been efficient. I don't know why they're playing the two quarterback system. I was watching the highlights of the game. I was watching him, and it's just a lot of checkdowns, a lot of passes in the flat, not taking a whole lot of chances, and they're not moving the ball at all. Because if you're...
Yeah, it's kind of weird. When you look at the stats, like we said last week, they were... Hatcher, the second quarterback for Arkansas State, and Logan Bonner were very close in every, you know, stat category. However, I mean, just from the eye test, I haven't watched Arkansas State play every game this year, but just the eye test that I've seen them, the games I've seen them play, I've thought Lane Hatcher was a better quarterback overall, and I don't really understand why they keep trying to shoehorn Logan Bonner in. I mean, again, the stats last week were identical, but when you watch the games, it just feels like Lane Hatcher's got, like, a better feel for the offense, and it can, you know, limit his mistakes and make some bigger plays. So I don't really understand still to what this, the mindset of this is, because even when you look at the stats, you know, the scoring from this game, Lane Hatcher was the only one on this team who scored, you know, threw a touchdown. So it was like Logan Bonner threw two picks. Why wouldn't you give Lane Hatcher more than 10 pass attempts in a game where Logan Bonner was bad, like you said?
Yeah, like you said before, they were kind of neck and neck. At the beginning of the season, Bonner was you know, pretty decent through the first five games, but these last few games, it's just been you know, nothing impressive and nothing, no chances being taken. All the play calling is just really, it's not getting them anywhere. with Bonner under center.
Yeah, I don't really get it. You know, I think eventually it's tough to say 8 games into the year because the season's pretty much over for them by this point. I mean, they're 1-4 in conference play. But, you know, I do feel like Blake Anderson, the Red Wolves head coach, maybe should have gotten a handle on this like a while ago and just decisively, if he wanted Logan Bonner to be the starter, which is what I get the vibe, because otherwise what would be the point in throwing a guy out there when he's thrown 2 picks and, you know, they let him throw the ball 30 times and he had 127 yards. So clearly they're trying to shoehorn Logan Bonner into this offense for some reason, but they don't have the level of confidence in him to let him just take the reins and just be the guy full time. So I've said this every week, whether it's been you, whether it's been Matt co-hosting with me, I don't understand it. It makes no sense. At a certain point, I feel like they should just let Lane Hatcher have a game to himself and see what he can do. If he stinks, it doesn't matter. The season's over for them anyway. They're not contending for anything. I mean, they might not make a bowl game, you know, provided the NCAA doesn't institute that rule where every team makes a bowl game. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't understand the thinking. They haven't been good defensively this year, really. And Bonner should not be starting full time for this team.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. The team was carried though by running back Lincoln Perry. He had 121 yards on 22 carries, and he was to me the offensive bright spot. He was slashing and cutting, and he did a very good job, I think, and that's what carried this team. I think without that good running game that we saw out of Perry, this score wouldn't have been as close.
Yeah, I agree. And also just on the Louisiana side of things, you know, they won this game obviously. So credit to them. They have games like this sometimes, and they did it with Georgia State earlier this year where they just play down to their competition randomly. And you going into this game as a viewer, if you know Sunbelt football, you would look and go, well, Louisiana should win this one easily. You know, they run the ball at a high clip. Their quarterback's pretty efficient, and can make some explosive plays. This should be an easy win. But then they just do this thing where they play down, like I said, to their competition. They went to overtime with Georgia State earlier this year, who we've said is all over the place consistency-wise. And Arkansas State's kind of the same deal. And I just feel like, you know, Louisiana still has that test ahead of them. They have to play App State as well. So to close the year, I mean, this lack of consistency from them compared to how they played last year, I feel like is just going to catch up to them eventually.
Yeah, Louisiana is way better than what this game represented. It just didn't seem like they were on top of. You know, they weren't on their A game. They could have done a whole lot better. Game was closer than they wanted to, but you know, a win's a win. But you know, it does get tougher from here for them. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. So with this win, Louisiana moves to 6-1 overall for the season, 4-1 in conference play. Arkansas State drops to 1-4 in Sunbelt play and 3-5 on the season. So the second to last game of Saturday's slate, Georgia Southern was able to pull out a 20-13 win over Troy. I think as a Georgia Southern fan, the thing that impressed me the most was that Wesley Kennedy, their best offensive option, hurt his tooth, I believe, early in this game and didn't play. He had one touch the whole game. He caught a ball for -4 yards. And then didn't see another carry, didn't see another reception. That was it for him. J.D. King hurt himself as well in the third quarter, I believe it was. And it was just announced earlier this week that he has torn his ACL and is out for the rest of the season. So, I mean, that's obviously really tough because, you know, he was a really good running back and kind of was the engine that made this whole offense go. But again, I was impressed that they were able to win the game without those two guys, because those have been the two players that have primarily, you know, been the focal point of this offense.
Yeah, I was really impressed too, despite the drawbacks. 326 rushing yards on 61 attempts. That's really, 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 really good. Almost like a, I mean, I know that's their MO is the whole run game. It was almost like some sort of throwback game from, I don't know, the 60s or something like that, because Troy's quarterback, Jacob Free, was 21 for 47, only 44% of his passes. He was only completing that percentage of just for 201 yards. And I mean that as a throwback game where either the teams are rushing for an exorbitant amount of yards or the quarterback is throwing wildly inefficient, you know, like back in the day when those games where you could win the Heisman Trophy with a, you know, 44% completion rate and five touchdowns for like 12 interceptions or something like that. That's what it reminded me of a lot. And the score reflects that. It was just a ground and pound game. And again, the team that controlled the rushing attack won the game. And again, that'll always equal a win most of the time.
So there's a couple of things for people who didn't watch this game. There's a couple of interesting things about this game that was very weird that I wanted to point out. Number one was that Troy's only touchdown came on a pick six that Shai Wirtz threw in the second quarter. It was one of the worst combinations of throws and decisions that I've seen this year in college football. So I guess kudos to him for that. But secondly, you go and look at the time of possession in this game. Georgia Southern had the ball for almost 43 minutes of this game. And this is kind of what happens with Troy's up-tempo passing offenses. When the passing isn't efficient and can't keep you on the field, you don't even burn clock. Like, you just don't have the ball. And that's essentially what happened was Troy would go out there, their quarterback, they would run the ball on first down, they would throw two quick incompletions, and then they were off the field again. And so it was really crazy to watch Georgia Southern climb themselves out of a hole that they made for themselves with Wirtz's pick six, like I said.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame too. I said last week that this was going to be the game of the week that I thought was going to be the game of the week. It was a close game. Unfortunately, the video I tried to watch were the highlights. I didn't want to watch the whole, you know, 3-hour game. I didn't get to watch the video wouldn't play for some reason, so I didn't get to watch any of these highlights of this game. And it's funny because that was the one that I was touting the most, and it played out just like I thought it would. I thought it would come down closer to the end, much like the Arkansas State Louisiana game, but it was a close game, and I was still impressed by Georgia Southern's running attack just based on what I saw stat wise.
Yeah, I mean the game definitely did come down to the end. Overall, you know, Troy had the ball in Georgia Southern's, red zone there at the end of the fourth quarter. It was just that Free threw a pass that ended up getting tipped by a linebacker, and it was intercepted for his second pick of the game. But a little bit more on the way that Free played, I was really surprised. I mean, Georgia Southern secondary played well overall, but he was so bad, missing like easy wide open receivers and just couldn't throw the ball down the field at all. So it's very rare, even in the Sun Belt, that you see a game where a quarterback throws the ball 47 times and he has more incompletions than he has completions. So, I mean, like I said, credit to Georgia Southern's pass defense, but Jacob Free was not good in this game at all.
No, yeah, he wasn't. He was not at all. That like I said, that 44% completion percentage, unless you're running the ball 61 times and you only attempt the ball eight times throwing the ball, that's just not going to win any games. That's just, at that point, 47 attempts, that's just desperation, you know, at some point.
Yeah, and it was, you know, I think they started feeling the heat there at the end. And kind of sat, someone probably walked up to their bench and said, "Hey guys, like, really scored outside of, you know, a pick six, which was, like I said, a bad decision and a worse throw, and then two field goals. Like, guys, we need to score an offensive touchdown to win this game or give ourselves a chance to win. And then, you know, like I said, at that point, it just became Jacob Free just trying to throw the ball every single down. And it just didn't work overall. But Georgia Southern snaps a 3-year losing streak to Troy, getting the 20-13 win. Georgia Southern moves to 5-2 overall in the season, 3-2 in Sun Belt play. Troy drops to 4-3 and 2-2 in conference play. Going into the last game of the night on Saturday, your Texas State Bobcats took on App State. I mean, what can you say? This is kind of what I think both of us expected. Was it not? I believe that this is kind of what we said, was that App State would roll pretty easily over Texas State.
Yeah, it was played out pretty much like every game of this last half of the season for Texas State. They struck first, they scored first, and it gets your hopes up. Kind of like the BYU game was, where they scored on the very first drive, and you're thinking, oh man, this is going to be a shootout. They went with Tyler Vitt over Brady McBride, and pretty much got the same results. They just lost the turnover battle. If you look at the stats, App State only outgained Texas State overall on offense by 6 yards, but it was the mistakes and it was the turnovers that really cost them this game. And it was the perfect storm for Texas State to play App State really close. They're outgaining their opponents 473 to 330 in total offense, and to just stay within 6 yards. But just mistakes, you know, porous defense, can't stop the run game, can't stop the passing game. I mean, that's pretty much has been the story of the year.
Yeah, so you kind of touched on it, just mistakes from the Bobcats that ended up, you know, costing them what was an early lead. You know, like you said, you know, Tyler Vitt throws a touchdown to Javen Banks to open up the game. They score in 3 plays. You know, App has a more methodical drive, 7 plays, 72 yards. They score at 7-7. Then, you know, later in the quarter, you know, Brendan Harrington for App returns a interception of Vitt for 49 yards and a score, and that was pretty much the ball game, you know. And Texas State, like, only scored what, 10 points after the, you know, they scored 7 points in the first 44 seconds of the game, and then they scored 10 points the remaining what, 59 minutes and 16 seconds or something like that. So That's a pretty wild stat to look at, that they scored 10 points the remainder of the game. But, you know, maybe you watched the game. I would assume I did not. Was it just App State's defense ended up just smothering Texas State?
Well, I actually watched the game in bits and pieces. I was actually helping somebody, so I had my phone in the moving truck while watching the game. But every time I was watching the game, it just like the – So when they played Louisiana, they were down 14-0, like super quick within the first few minutes. And you would think that would be like a backbreaker or confidence breaker, but no, they came back and they made it a closer game. They did lose the game, but they made it closer. But this game, it just seemed like once the mistakes started pouring in, once App State started rolling, the confidence kind of just went out of the team, and the overall, like, I guess, fire, I guess, just kind of, there was nothing left. It was close for the, you know, the first quarter when it was 14-7, but App State was driving, and it just, I mean, the desire's there. It just didn't seem like everyone was on the same page as far as confidence wise. And that's the overall theme I got from this game.
Yeah, so on App State side of things, you know, outside of the defensive touchdown that I mentioned, they really were content, and this has been their kind of MO the last couple years. They just run the ball and they play defense. And We said the same thing about Coastal. Well, App did it just a little more efficiently. You know, Zach Thomas was only asked to throw, he threw the ball 27 times, but he didn't even eclipse 200 yards passing. But he did throw three touchdowns. And then App was able to run for 258 yards as a team. As a team, they ran for 6 yards a pop. So, I mean, anytime you can get that out of your offense, it's hard to look at that and say, no, I think we're going to put the ball in the air with Zach Thomas for absolutely no reason. So, I mean, I totally get it. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it was just kind of a backslide there. Do you think at a certain stage in this game, they maybe should have subbed McBride in for Vitt once it was kind of established that Texas State wasn't going to be able to move the ball like they have been, you know, in weeks past?
No, because I think this was more of a defensive decline for the Bobcats in this game. Fans have been clamoring for Vitt to be put in the game because of McBride's inconsistencies. So it's kind of like what Arkansas State's not doing. They need to just let one quarterback in there play the whole game and take the whole game on his back. But it wasn't just Vitt's fault. The defense just, you know, the 6 yards of carry, the 258 yards rushing. Zach Thomas, even though he didn't throw a whole lot, was very efficient because he could be very efficient because the running game opened up so much. And I think it was just App State's offense was just too much. And Texas State couldn't create any opportunities as far as turnovers or just any breaks. And so that was really the only way that Texas State's going to win any games is if they get those breaks, the turnover, everything mm-hmm. like that. I mean, Vitt can throw a couple of interceptions, but if you can counteract that, then Texas State does have a chance. But I figure just let Vitt play the game, the whole game. Let each young man, whoever they pick as the starter, just let them play the whole game. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it would have mattered. I mean, maybe McBride would have, you know, had that chip on his shoulder that he wasn't starting and maybe would have brought him back. But but Tyler Vitt doesn't play defense, so I would say just keep him in there.
Yeah, for sure. So with the win, App State moves to 5-1 in overall for this season, 3-0 in conference play. Texas State drops to 1-8 and 1-4 in conference play. Turning the page to this coming Saturday, the earliest game of the bunch. The noon kickoff, Coastal Carolina travels to Troy. We talked about it with Coastal and Troy's recaps of their previous week's games. You know, I see the line as it currently sits on Thursday night when we're recording this. Coastal is an 11-point favorite. I mean, their smallest margin of victory this season was 3 points. And that was against Louisiana in what was a really tight game. Troy is not Louisiana. So the next closest margin of victory they had was against Georgia Southern when Coastal was forced to play a backup quarterback, and they still won by 2 touchdowns. So I see Coastal rolling here by about 2 touchdowns, if not more than that.
Yeah, I could see that. To me, the most intriguing part of this matchup is going to be the Troy defense versus Coastal Carolina's quarterback, Grayson McCall, just himself. McCall's been very efficient this year, almost 1,400 yards passing, 16 touchdowns with only one interception, 271 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns. Troy gives up 24.6 points a game. Coastal scores 37.9 points a game. Troy has 11 sacks, 6 interceptions. Something's got to give in this game. That's going to be intriguing. I think Troy is going to keep it close. And by what I mean, keep it close is more in the 2 touchdown range against Coastal. I think Coastal is going to win this by a decent margin, but I don't think that Coastal is going to be as efficient as they have been these past couple of games. But it will be a Coastal double-digit win.
Yeah. I think this, you know, I'm looking through some news now. I don't see any updates with Gunnar Watson, Troy's starting quarterback, his upper body injury that's kept him out the last couple weeks. I don't see really any updates, so I'm going to go ahead with assuming that Jacob Free is going to play his fourth game of the year for the Trojans. If he plays the way that he played against Georgia Southern, I think Coastal is going to tear them apart. And with how much better Coastal's defense is in my mind to Georgia Southern's, I just don't see a way that Troy is able to keep this game close, because you saw it last week. They can't keep their offense on the field. So Coastal can do whatever they want offensively. So if they want to employ that Georgia Southern, you know, game plan of run the ball 50 times, they can do that. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see them do that against Troy here.
Yeah, if I'm Coastal, I come out in the game and I'm airing it out. I'm bombing it out and trying to destroy Troy's confidence. They can score, say, on the first drive, just bomb it out, just air attack, air raid attack. And then once they have that lead, just run the ball. And I think that's what Coastal Carolina needs to do to put the game away early and to just take away Troy's confidence, and also to give them confidence in themselves, especially their offense, that they can score at will and take control of the game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, like I said, if Troy isn't going to be able to keep their offense on the field, it almost doesn't matter what Coastal decides to do offensively. They're going to be successful, because if they hold the ball, I mean, it doesn't even have to be as extreme as last week. If they hold the ball for 35 minutes, they're probably going to win this game. So I just see Coastal, you know, steamrolling Troy, just because I think Coastal's a complete other, maybe two tiers above where Troy currently sits right now. But moving through the 2 o'clock kick, Louisiana welcomes South Alabama in this one. Louisiana is a 15.5-point favorite. I mean, we kind of said this, they play up and down to their competition. I don't think I would take either side on this game, because you have no idea which Louisiana team's going to show up. But I mean, there is always the potential that Louisiana plays down to the Jaguars, and this game is, you know, similar to the one that Louisiana just played last week with Arkansas State.
Yeah, I agree with that. Louisiana may be number 25. They're not close to what their ranking is. They are a good team. They do deserve it. But you're right. It could be one of those instances where they do play down to the competition. South Alabama is nothing. They're not great, but they're not horrible. They're just the middle of the road. There's nothing that stands out about them. They don't play horribly, but they don't play great on a consistent basis. So I think it's going to be a close game, closer than the odds. And whoever wins the turnover battle is going to win this game. And because South Alabama, in their losses, have turned over the ball. The majority of their turnovers have been in those losses. So if they can keep the mistakes at minimum, make Louisiana play down to them, make some mistakes, this will be a closer game.
So I actually am going to immediately retract what I said earlier, and there's a reason for it. Let me read a very weird stat to you. Are you ready for this? Okay, I'm going to take that as a yes. In the first game of this season, Louisiana beat Iowa State by 17 points. Since then, they have not won a game by more than 10. So for that reason, it looks like we lost Vidal on accident here. For that reason, I'm going to take personally Louisiana, South Alabama rather, by the plus 15.5. So yeah, that's my take on this one. So getting into the next game, 2:30 kick, Georgia State travels to take on App. You know, App is a 16-point favorite in this game. Personally, when I look at this, I don't know if the stats bear this out because I don't have the history between these two teams recently, but I feel like when App State plays Georgia State, it always feels like Georgia State might blow up, and then they just don't, and App always just slaps them around. So I actually feel fairly confident taking App minus 16 here. Georgia State, you know, we talked about it earlier in the show, is all over the place consistency-wise. So I just don't – I see this as one of their down weeks, you know, versus last week when they scored 50. I wouldn't be surprised if they lost this game by 20, 30 points.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the stats. I did a little stat crunching. App leads the series 6-0, and the average score is 37.2-12. So I think that it depends on what Georgia State team shows up. Their defense and their losses this year, they've given up 548 rushing yards on a 4.38 average. But in their wins, they've only given up 175 total rushing yards on a 2.43 average per carry. So if Georgia State to win this game, they need to play their rush defense, you know, just to the apex, to the max, to have a chance of this game. But I don't think that will happen. I think App State will control the ball, and I think they will make this a 7-0 series lead.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why I should believe that. You know, you read it off. I mean, the average score says it all between these two teams. I don't really see any reason to take Georgia State even plus the points here. I mean, they beat up and score a lot of points against bad teams. And when they play a team the caliber of an App or of a Coastal, it really shows why they're hovering around 500 every week. And these teams are competing for the conference title game. And when Matt and I were previewing this season for Georgia State, you know, we didn't even know what to take away from how this team was going to look. I mean, my best case scenario was they go 6-6 or 500 or however many games get played. So, I mean, they're kind of on track for that right now. So, again, I feel pretty confident saying App's going to run away with this game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they'll do the same thing they did last week. They'll run the ball, control the clock, control the, you know, they'll have good quality drives, and I think they'll pull this out. I'll say they,
yeah,
by 17.
Yeah. So the last game of the day, weirdly enough, is a 3:30 kick. No night games this week. By the way, just a side note, Arkansas State and UL Monroe's game has been postponed. So yes, the last game of the week, Georgia Southern welcomes, my Georgia Southern Eagles welcome your Texas State Bobcats in this one. Like I said, you know, J.D. King, Georgia Southern's leading rusher, out for the year with a torn ACL. That's going to be a tough break for them, just because this offense has been up and down as much as, you know, as good as their stats have looked the last couple of weeks. Starting the season, they were very slow offensively. So anybody that can provide them any sort of offensive production has to be almost put in a glass case at this point, because they just cannot lose any other offensive players and still keep rolling, you know, as the season goes along. Georgia Southern currently a 10.5-point favorite. I don't really know what to say about this game. Georgia Southern's defense was excellent last week, but that's not the norm. So I think tentatively you take Georgia Southern in the 10.5, but I don't feel great about it.
It's funny because I feel the opposite. I think even though Southern's depleted, I think they can still run the ball, especially what we've seen out of Texas State's run defense. It's going to be one of those games where if Texas State's going to have any chance, it's going to have to be, you know, they're going to have to win the turnover battle. They're going to have some trick plays. They're going to have some ingenuity on offense and, you know, pull out everything like the fake field goal they had a couple weeks ago for the touchdown. They need to do something like that to stay in this game, because I think that despite the injuries, Georgia Southern, I think, will still be able to run this ball pretty efficiently.
Yeah, I mean, the worry for me comes in, and there's really only one game that immediately springs to mind when I say this. It was the game that we played against UL Monroe. The way that that game went, and I honestly wouldn't be shocked to see this game between Texas State and Georgia Southern go similarly, not the exact same, but similarly. Georgia Southern at one point in that game, with 5 minutes left in the third quarter, led by 18 points. They came within 1 yard of losing to UL Monroe. And it was just, they have this thing where if they get out ahead big, they just take their foot off the gas, and they don't get out ahead big a lot. So they tend to keep teams very close to them score-wise, even if they're significantly a better team. It typically doesn't matter on the scoreboard because, I mean, okay, give me 1 second. I'm just going to go through and look at Georgia Southern's last couple games. So they beat Massachusetts by a lot, but that's not a huge accomplishment by any stretch of the imagination. They scored 14 against Coastal. They scored 24 against South Alabama. They scored 20 against Troy. I don't know how you can be a 10.5 point favorite. If you're averaging, let's say, 21 points a game, you have to win that game to cover the spread 21 to 9. Mm-hmm. So 21 to 11, maybe? No, 21 to 10. So, I mean, I just don't see their defense being as locked down as they were last week. If you guys, whoever you throw out there, McBride, Vitt, whatever, if you guys throw somebody out there who can sling the rock a little bit, there is reason for Eagle fans to be concerned about it.
Yeah, like you said, if they throw McBride out there, especially in a situation like that, it could be a good thing for the Bobcats. It could be that perfect storm where that style of gunslinging could work in this game. But yeah, it's gonna come down to how the defenses react to each other. Like you were saying, that, you know, a passing game could expose Georgia Southern, but you know, Texas State's running defense has kind of been on the decline recently, so it's kind of one of those. It could be a blowout on one end, and it could be this really close game, but I'm just not really sure at this point. It's going to be very, very interesting to see what is going to happen. Of course, we both, you know, want, you know, the better outcome, but I'm just not sure what outcome that's going to be.
Yeah, for sure. So just wrapping up here, give me the one thing that you know, it doesn't have to be a game, but just the one thing you're looking forward to in this weekend slate of Sunbelt games, and let the folks on social media know where they can find you. They can always find me at Watch the Stone on Twitter. I will go ahead and with my one thing, I am looking forward to Coastal Carolina and Troy. I want to see if Coastal can keep it rolling and, you know, keep Troy at bay. If Troy's quarterback can go, you know, it could be a game, but I haven't seen any updates about Troy's quarterback, Gunnar Watson. So I'm just going to assume that Coastal may roll in this game, but I'm not sure. Vidal, give me the one thing you're looking forward to this weekend, and then tell the folks on social media where they can find you.
I am actually looking forward to the Texas State Georgia Southern game. It's one of those games. I wrote an article a few years ago about potential new rivals for Texas State, And I always thought that Georgia Southern could kind of be, because it's kind of like it's kind of the opposite, you know, air raid versus the, you know, the run first offense. So I'm looking forward to this. It's also in 2 weeks, it'll be the 15th anniversary of when these two teams played in the 1AA playoffs in a 50-35 thriller in San Marcos, which was a very long time ago. I don't know how old you are, but I was at this game, and it was a very exciting game. But that's the game I'm looking forward to. And you can find me on Twitter at @Vidal_Espinoza. Yeah.
Perfect. So we'll just wrap up here. We are looking forward to this weekend's slate of games as well, and we will be back next week with another episode of the Sun Belt Podcast.